Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, December 28th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
European equities rally, oil gains, and stocks in Asia limp into the new year.
The yen strengthens as investors look for havens from volatility.
Traders struggle to make sense of the week's wild price swings.
And bets on a Fed rate hike next year fall to zero.
New Yorkers are saying, look, up in the sky. Why is it glowing? Plus, it's day seven of the government shutdown with no end in sight. I'm Michael Barr. Those stories and more straight ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, same opponent, same result for the Knicks, while the Devils and Rangers split outcomes.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And European equities are rallying after an underwhelming session in Asia. 501 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are higher, up 6 points. Dow futures up 44. NASDAQ futures up 10. The DAX in Germany is up 1.6%. So is the CAC in Paris. The FTSE 100 up 1.7%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.3%. Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.75%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.56%. NYMEX crude oil up 2.5%, up $1.10 to $45.70 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $2.20 at $12.78.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1444, and the yen, 110.36. Nathan.
Karen, it has been a roller coaster for U.S. futures overnight following yesterday's wild swing in stocks that saw the S&P 500 erase a drop of almost 3% in an afternoon recovery. Overseas today, things are a bit more tame. Let's start in Asia, where equities put in a mixed performance. Bloomberg's Rashad Salamat has details from Hong Kong. Good morning, Rish.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Asian stocks having a bit of a mixed gig on this penultimate trading day of 2018. In essence, we limped toward a modest weekly advance at the tail end of what's been the worst year since 2011. Yen continued to strengthen. It's risen for all but one of the last 10 days. Meanwhile, stocks in China pulling higher in the session. One should remember, though, that it has been the world's worst major stock market this year. The Shanghai Composite about 25% below where it started the year, $2.3 trillion. Been wiped off the index. In Hong Kong, I'm Rashad Salamat, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Rashad, thank you. Japanese stocks underperformed in the region with the Nikkei sliding 0.3% after disappointing economic data. Bloomberg's Brett Miller reports from Tokyo.
Japan's factory output dropped again in November, marking the seventh contraction this year. The coming quarter may bring a rebound, but the US-China trade war, confusion over Brexit, and the slowing global economy all will weigh on Japanese businesses. Also out Friday, December price readings for Tokyo showed inflation slipping to less than half the central bank's 2% target. Job figures, though, provided a bright spot, with unemployment still at a very low 2.5%. In Tokyo, Brett Miller, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brett, thanks. In Japan's 10-year bond yield fell below zero for the first time since September of 2017. Government debt around the world has been rallying amid concern of a global economic slowdown. Japanese yields declined this month, even as the Bank of Japan cut purchases of 5 to 10-year debt.
Stocks in Europe are posting gains after yesterday's slide. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. A sea of green across traders' Bloomberg screens today. A positive picture on what is the final trading day of 2018 for some European markets. Yesterday, we saw the Euro Stoxx 50, the latest index in the region, to drop into bear market territory. But today, every major market in the region trading more than 1% higher. Despite today's gains, not only is Europe's Stoxx 600 on course for its worst year since the financial crisis 10 years ago, but European equities are also seeing lower volumes. This year, fewer than 600 billion shares will change hands. That's the lowest trading volume since the year 2000. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ewan, thank you. A new Bloomberg survey of oil analysts shows nearly a third of them expect Brent crude to rebound sharply next year. Bloomberg's Tina Davis has details.
they are expecting Brent oil, which is the international benchmark, to average about $70 a barrel next year. So it shows a real optimism among analysts that the OPEC cuts are going to come into place and that 2019 is going to see much more of a run-up in oil prices than we have seen.
Checking prices now, oil is gaining this morning with Brent up 1.7% or 91 cents, trading at $53.07 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate is up 2.2% or $1.01, trading at $45.62 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate.
Political risk has been one of the main threats to financial markets this year, and that shows no signs of slowing. Berenberg senior economist Callum Pickering.
Political risk certainly built up over the course of 2018. In the second half, we started to worry about European economics. I think the market is now worried a little more about US economics. But for now, I see markets really expressing risks rather than something genuinely sinister in the underlying economy. So even though we're in the 10th year and it feels like a long upswing, there are no major excesses that lead me to believe as an economist the corrective recession is around the corner.
That isn't stopping predictions of a recession as soon as next year, though, with concerns about slowing global growth, the U.S.-China trade dispute, and the slide in stocks around the world.
And that has traders expecting no interest rate increase from the Federal Reserve next year. And you can count former Fed Governor Lawrence Lindsay among those saying the Fed should pause.
The facts have changed. Inflation is coming down, and we began to see real stresses in the financial markets. You know, those are facts that they need to take into account, and they didn't. And so, yes, they do need to change their mind.
Traders now see more than a 50% chance the Fed cuts rates as soon as 2020.
And the dollar is weakening as signs point to the U.S. government shutdown extending into next year. The greenback slipped against all G10 currencies. The yen and Swiss franc are stronger as investors seek safer assets. Right now, the yen is at 110.38. The Swiss franc is at 0.9855. Futures, meanwhile, are moving higher. S&P futures are up about 8 points. The Dow futures up 64. And NASDAQ futures up about 15. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Also up this Friday morning, Michael Barr. Tell us what's happening in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. It was a peaceful night in New York City until it turned into what looked like a scene from Mars Attacks.
It looked like it was daytime. You look in the sky and it was bright blue. It was insane. It was a really weird blue color.
Authorities say an electrical fire at Con Ed Utility in Queens after 9 p.m. last night lit up the Manhattan skyline and spooked people across the Big Apple, including State Senator Michael Gianaris.
I was home. We heard an explosion. The lights went out. I came back on. Then when I looked out the window to see what happened, I thought a street light maybe was flickering due to a faulty bulb. And then when you look up into the sky, it was the entirety of the sky turning this blue color that everyone's now seen on the footage everywhere.
The fire was eventually brought under control with no injuries. Scattered power outages also delayed flights at LaGuardia Airport. The partial government shutdown is likely to continue into next year. There was no sign of any progress toward a plan to fund 9 government departments that closed after funding ran out December 21st. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
House Republican leaders now say they don't plan any votes this week, and the Senate chamber remained largely empty as Kansas Republican Pat Roberts went through the motions, figuratively speaking, of convening for all of roughly 4 minutes.
There is no further business to come before the Senate. The Senate stands adjourned.
Until a pro forma session Monday, but no business is planned until lawmakers come back January 2nd. The White House, meantime, issued a statement saying the president does not want the government to remain shut down, but will not sign a proposal that does not first prioritize our country's safety and security. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
California police say they have identified the suspect who killed police officer Ranil Singh Wednesday during a traffic stop in the city of Newman. Authorities say the suspect, who is still at large, is in the country illegally. New Mexico authorities say an autopsy performed on the 8-year-old Guatemalan boy who died in U.S. custody shows he had the flu. The nation's oldest World War II veteran, who also was believed to be the oldest living man in the U.S., has died. Richard Overton was in his 30s when he volunteered for the Army. Overton, born in 1906, died yesterday in Austin, Texas at 112. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Wow, Michael, thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Knicks were just getting over the Christmas Day drubbing by Milwaukee, so they begin a road trip. Where else but in Wisconsin? Enes Kanter was replaced in the starting lineup by Luke Kornet, so Kanter took out his frustrations on a possible MVP.
Kanter looks at him, still looking at him. Giannis is down. Kanter, well, what's the lead going head-to-head, forehead-to-forehead?
Giannis down.
No foul, no taunting. Come on, guys, you got to catch some of this stuff.
The ref tells you what has happened. Kanter has been ejected after getting a T.
Fox Sports North, same result. More of the Greek freak taking over as Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 31 points, 14 rebounds, as the Bucks followed up their 14-point win on Tuesday with a 16-point victory, 112-96. The Knicks have dropped 11 of 12 and have the second-worst record in the league. On the ice, the Devils buried the Bruins from the face-off in Boston.
Travis Zajac centering this line, drops a pass for Randy Green to the circle. They score! David Severson on the rush for the Devils, and 25 seconds in, they've got the lead in Boston.
MSG with the call, 5-2 Devils, as Mackenzie Blackwood stopped 40 shots for New Jersey. Rangers weren't as fortunate at home, but still managed a point, losing 4-3 to the Blue Jackets in overtime. College football, Wisconsin thrashed Miami at Yankee Stadium in the Pinstripe Bowl, 35-3. Hal Steinbrenner presented the Badgers with the trophy, and Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, who played for Wisconsin, sent a good luck video to the team before the game. Duke beat Temple, and Baylor outlasted Vanderbilt. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Rob, thank you. I want to invite you to join us tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where they go bowling the only way that matters this time of year, Fiesta Bowl. Executive Director Mike Neely joins the crew to discuss the money behind college football's bowl system. That's tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. on Bloomberg Radio. You can download the Bloomberg Business of Sports as an Apple podcast. Futures pointing to a higher open on this Friday morning on Wall Street. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high return income producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European shares are rising along with U.S. stock index futures, while Asian stocks were mixed as traders struggled to make sense of wild price swings in the final sessions of the year. The yen is leading gains against the dollar. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 11 points this morning. Dow futures up 96 and Nasdaq futures up 24. The DAX in Germany is up 1.8%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.75%. Yield on the 2-year 2.56%. NYMEX crude oil up 2.9% of $1.32 to $45.93 a barrel. COMEX gold, little change, down about a tenth of a percent, actually, down $1.20 to $12.79.90 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.50, the yen, 110.36. And we are looking for a report on pending home sales at a 10 o'clock Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. It's day 7 of the partial government shutdown, and it looks like it will extend into 2019 after House Republicans said they did not plan any votes this week. The Senate and House held brief sessions yesterday afternoon, and neither chamber took any votes. Police in Newman, California say they have identified the suspect who killed Officer Ranil Singh Wednesday during a traffic stop. Authorities say the suspect, who is still on the loose, is in the country illegally. It turned the New York City skyline a glowing blue last night. Authorities say it was an electrical fire at a utility company facility in Queens. It delayed flights at LaGuardia Airport. In the NBA, the Knicks lost along with the Celtics and Warriors. In the NHL, the Devils skated past the Bruins 5-2. The Rangers lost. The Capitals won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined on the line this Friday morning by Michael Purvis, Chief Global Strategist at Whedon & Company. How's your stomach holding up after all the volatility of the last several days, Michael?
I know. It's been gut-wrenching, and it's been brain-wrenching, too. I think it's very hard to, you know, as you see this kind of manic price action both up and down, I think people are sort of grasping for narratives to ascribe to the price action, which I actually think is almost a little bit dangerous in a way, because the price action is so unusual. It can be interpreted so many different ways, and I think you have to sort of take a deep breath and step back a little bit and recognize one thing, that there's clearly a lot of volatility in the market, but that there's also the noise to signal ratio is unusually high here in terms of what we can actually divine from these price movements.
All right. Well, let's step back, take a breath. Maybe I'm putting you on the spot here by asking you whether you see a narrative behind all this volatility.
Well, look, I think as you try to sort of deconstruct what's been happening over the last 3 months, you know, we went from, you know, fresh lifetime highs across stock market indices in the U.S. and VIX prints of 11. If you remember back in August and September, you know, we had that very sort of strong risk on condition. And then what happened early October, you had Powell talk about far from neutral. That kind of got the volatility party started. And then it kept persisting. The volatility persisted through today, in spite of the fact that the U.S. economic data was good. The overseas data was not so good and trending lower, but not in a tragic way. So, you know, what has transpired there? I think the bond market did not spiral out of control like many suggested it would back in early October. You know, yields on the 10-year have gone from that 3.25 back in early October all the way down to 2.75, right? So the risk parity model is might have been bent, but it's certainly not broken. So I think when I look at it, I think there's one massive variable that is very hard to quantify or contextualize, which is trade, right? And that is one massive geopolitical risk that has persisted. And I think part of the problem with understanding what 2019 and 2020 are going to look like is we just don't know how trade is going to be resolved. I would certainly say that if trade is resolved constructively in the next couple of months, I know that's a big assumption to make, but if it were to, if that condition does come through, I think you're going to look at a very constructive risk on environment, and these levels will look like a screaming buys here. But I think it's almost binary, right? You know, we just don't know what's going to happen between the two largest economies and the two most important economies in the world going into what could be a protracted trade war.
Is there too much uncertainty in the trade dispute, do you think, for investors to put their money into risk assets at this point? Or is there sort of a glimmer where they could take a little more risk on?
Well, I think it's a great question. And I think one of the things that I'm really intrigued by is if you look at the VIX, right, which is, of course, very elevated right now, it's actually trading at a 6-point premium to the VIX for the emerging market ETF, the EEM. It's called the VXEEM. That volatility metric for emerging markets typically trades at a 4, 5, 6-point premium to the VIX. It's the other way around right now. And when you think about trade, well, emerging market equities should be hit more so than the U.S. equities, right? The U.S. is the best house on the block. But what's happened is that the emerging market equities have been almost a relative safe haven, if you will, being a little aggressive with that term here. But it's been remarkably resilient through a lot of this volatility here. And I think what that's signaling is a couple of things. One, that there is a value floor in the context of this broader trade condition that emerging markets reached. They reached it much, you know, probably back in September, and they've been trading in a more benign fashion ever since then. And the U.S. is still sort of groping for that value floor. I suspect we're pretty close to that. I mean, if you look at real earnings yields on the S&P 500, if you look at the forward PE, it can accommodate a fair amount of earnings misses next year. Relative, you know, if consensus forecasts end up being too high, it can certainly accommodate that. And when you think about for 450 to 500 basis points on a nominal earnings yield on the S&P 500 above the where the 10-year yield is on treasuries, that gives you a fair amount of comfort as well here. I think the I think there is some, there are glimmers of hope here. There. It's just what happens in D.C. and China is going to help determine how quickly we pivot on that.
Michael Purvis, Chief Global Strategist of Wieden & Company. Always appreciate your insights. Happy New Year. A little early for that, but pass that along at any rate. Futures on Wall Street are pointing to a higher open on this Friday morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's 5:25 on Wall Street. Tune into our weekend edition of Bloomberg Daybreak, where we set you up for the week ahead on Wall Street. Listen tomorrow morning at 5, then again at 4 p.m. and Sunday morning at 9 here on Bloomberg Radio.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks in Europe are rallying as we close out a volatile trading week. Right now, Europe's Stock 600 is up 1.6%. U.S. futures are higher by 0.4% following yesterday's roller coaster session that saw the biggest upward reversal in the S&P 500 since 2010. At one point, the index was down 2.8% before rallying to close up almost 0.9%. Bloomberg market strategist Mark Cranfield.
Wednesday and Thursday taken together, two of the most volatile days of the year on pretty decent volume as well. But we are seeing good signs that it's forming some sort of a base here after such a terrible month. So we're getting a little bit optimistic that the short-term pain is over, at least for American equity market, and we could have a slightly brighter start to January.
Now in Asia, Japanese shares fell. The topics capped its worst annual performance since 2011. After disappointing economic data out of Japan, Bloomberg Daybreak editor Christine Burke has details.
The factory output, we saw a decline there. It was the sixth contraction in 8 months. Other data we got tells us that the labor market is still quite tight. Inflation still remains well below target. There's a lot that's clouding the outlook. There seems to be a lot of risk that any rebound that does happen may not be very strong.
Meanwhile, Japan's 10-year bond yield fell below zero for the first time since September of 2017.
Crude is continuing its roller coaster ride with volatility soaring on uncertainty over OPEC and American supply, a trade war between the U.S. and China, and the Federal Reserve's monetary policy. Oil is recovering from yesterday's 3.5% drop. Right now, NYMEX crude oil is up 2.4% at $45.69 a barrel, while Brent is up 1.6% at $52.98.
While the partial U.S. government shutdown continues, it won't delay the release of next week's monthly jobs data, Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
The report is scheduled for release a week from today, January 4th. Bureau of Labor Statistics Press Officer Gary Steinberg says BLS data will continue to be released on schedule. That report will show 180,000 jobs added in December, according to the median estimates in Bloomberg's survey of economists. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. S&P futures higher, up about 14 points. Dow futures up 121, and NASDAQ futures up about 30. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.75%. The yield on the two-year, 2.56%. And COMEX gold is down 0.1% on $1.10 to $1,280 an ounce. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here. Sunglasses on. Tell us what's happening in the world. Well, it was bright last night, Michael.
What in the world, Nathan? It takes a lot to rattle the New Yorkers. So when the nighttime sky glowed blue after 9 p.m. last night...
It was freaky. It was like Independence Day in the movie, where you just look up and a weird blue color that you haven't seen lighting up the clouds in the sky.
State Senator Michael Giannaris, it wasn't a UFO. It was an electrical fire at a Con Ed utility plant in Queens. It triggered scattered power outages. Con Ed spokesman Mike Clendenin.
There were some residual delays with nearby subway trains. We have no reported injuries.
LaGuardia Airport had to switch to backup generators during the blackout. Power has since been restored, but not before Delta Airlines and American Airlines diverted some of their flights to nearby airports. It is the seventh day of the partial government shutdown. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports it looks like the shutdown will drag into 2019.
And that is January 3rd. Now, the Senate did reconvene for a very short time, and then presiding Senator Pat Roberts.
There is no further business to come before the Senate. I ask that it stand adjourned.
No further business because it had already passed legislation with wall funding. So the next flurry of potential activity could actually come after noon, January 3rd, when the new House convenes and Nancy Pelosi presumably will be elected House Speaker. Impasse continues for the time being. Meanwhile, at the border, California Congressman Mark DeSaulnier.
The asylum seekers are doing what's afforded to them under U.S. law.
The president has tweeted, "This isn't about the wall. We have the issue, border security 2020. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
This worker with the Department of Agriculture says the budget stalemate has a big impact on his family.
The last one, I think it was 3 weeks, and that was pretty bad because we just weren't really planned for it. And my spouse is actually a contractor, so it affected her also.
Meanwhile, Bloomberg Law has learned that a union representing government employees is considering suing the federal government for making employees work without pay during the shutdown. New Mexico authorities say an autopsy performed on the 8-year-old Guatemalan boy who died in U.S. custody shows he had the flu. There are blizzard warnings, flood watches, and possible tornadoes as a powerful storm moves east, stretches from Canada all the way to the Gulf Coast. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. Same opponent, same result for the Knicks as Giannis Antetokounmpo did a number on New York again with 31 points and 14 rebounds in a 112-96 win in Milwaukee.
Bucks number one in the league in scoring at about 117 per game. Bledsoe to Giannis, slam it down with two hands. Nice shovel to his left by Bledsoe, and the two-hand pack by Giannis to get him to 28 for the day.
Bucks Radio Network, the loss to Milwaukee is the second in 48 hours, the 11th in the last 12 games for New York. Enes Kanter was replaced in the starting lineup by Luke Kornet. Kanter got ejected for fighting with Antetokounmpo. New York has the second worst record in the NBA. To the frozen floor, the Devils got off to a fast start in Boston and never looked back with a 5-2 win. Damon Severson scored just 25 seconds in. New Jersey made it stand up with 40 saves from Mackenzie Blackwood. Rangers salvage a point in the Metro, but the Jackets had the last laugh.
Here, Dubois comes off the wing. Dubois scores! Blue Jackets win in overtime. Pierre-Luc Dubois, his first goal in 11 games, and it is a dandy as the Jackets jump off the bench.
Fox Sports Ohio, 4-3, the final in overtime. Chris Kreider had a pair of goals in the loss, and Hank Lundqvist saved 25 for the Blue Shirts. In college football at Yankee Stadium, the New Era Pinstripe Bowl. Wisconsin rolled Miami 35-3, thanks to Jonathan Taylor's 205 yards on the ground. Duke doubled up Temple 56-27, and Baylor won in a shootout against Vandy 45-38. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on the new CEO of the Dallas Mavericks and how she is cleaning up two decades of toxic workplace culture. Also in this week's edition, how private equity is hoping to shake things up at Breitling. Benedict Campbell wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
Breitling is one of those better-known watch brands. It's been in family hands for about 100 years. And then last year, something happened that doesn't happen very often in the watch industry. It got sold to private equity.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why? Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly, weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time, right here on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report and Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Actor Matt Damon just bought Brooklyn's most expensive property. New York Post says it's a $16.7 million penthouse at the Standish, which used to be known as the Standish Arms Hotel. Damon once lived on the Upper West Side. He bought the residence at 171 Columbia Heights with his wife. Connecticut homeowners have seen monthly housing expenses go down, according to census data. Hartford Current says fewer people are spending what's considered a too large part of their income on housing. But the same improvements have not been seen by renters, who are increasing in number. New Jersey getting ready to lessen the financial burden of subsidizing solar energy development. The state's moving to end the current program subsidizing solar development through fees on ratepayers. Press of Atlantic City says it plans to replace it with a less costly program to continue encouraging solar development. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. The Fed says job growth in Texas will likely weaken in 2019 if oil prices stay at current levels.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on KMOX in St. Louis, I'm reporting on farmers worried about aid payments and the partial government shutdown.
I'm Anna Edwards. On Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London, we're reporting on Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn's calls for an earlier vote on the government's Brexit deal.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on Mount Sinai Health's investment boost in diet. Dietitian-designed hospital meals.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting the Department of Justice is backing off its probe into the merger between Comcast and NBC Universal.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. The morning pointing to a higher open on Wall Street. Taking a look at the futures contracts right now, they're surging a bit with S&P futures up 15 points now, Dow futures up 133, NASDAQ futures up 32 points, price of the 10-year up 3/32, the yield 2.75%, two-year treasuries at 2.56%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up on 5:41 on Wall Street. Are there any macro factors behind market volatility? And is Fed tightening really on autopilot? NatWest Markets economist Kevin Cummins joins us next on Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares are rising along with U.S. stock index futures, while Asian stocks are mixed as traders struggle to make sense of wild price swings in the final sessions of the year. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 15 points this morning. Dow futures up 128 and NASDAQ futures up 30. The DAX in Germany is up 1.7%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.75%. The yield on the 2-year 2.56%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.1%, up 93 cents to $45.54 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.20 to $12.82.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.1468, and the yen, 110.26. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, it is day 7 of the partial government shutdown. It will likely continue into the new year and be taken up by the new Congress. President Trump and Democratic leaders continue to spar publicly over funding to reopen the government and whether to build the president's border wall. The mother of an 8-year-old Guatemalan boy who died in U.S. custody says she spoke with her son the day before he and his father arrived at the U.S. border and says he wasn't sick here or on the way. New Mexico authorities say an autopsy performed on Felipe Gomez Alonso shows he had the flu. In the NBA, the Knicks lost along with the Celtics and Warriors. In the NHL, the Devils skated past the Bruins 5-2. The Rangers lost. The Capitals won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's 5:48 on Wall Street. Kevin Cummins joins us now. He's an economist at NatWest Markets. As we continue to try to make sense of these lurching markets, Kevin, I wonder if you see any macro factors behind the wild swings we've seen of late.
Hi, good morning, Nathan. Thanks for having me. The markets are obviously pretty thin here at year end, so it's difficult to make too much of the moves that we're seeing. But, the economic backdrop, for the most part, is still pretty healthy as we head into 2019. There's a full slate of economic data that apparently will be released early at the start of 19. But, of course, concerns and uncertainty about how long this government shutdown lasts, some of the data will be in limbo until the shutdown is resolved.
Yeah, I imagine that that would make it more difficult as an economist to forecast how things will go into 2019. But the shutdown itself has an impact as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, it'll, you know, we'll see. We'll hopefully get a little bit more guidance from various government agencies when the shutdown ends and all the data are released. But for the most part, some data will be muddied by the government shutdown, as some workers will be furloughed. And it'll kind of depend on the indicator and depend on how the government actually handles each of the series that are going to be published.
How could the shutdown itself eat into U.S. growth?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest concern is that it spills into confidence and eventually filters through to the consumer, given the share of the consumer is over 60% of the economy. So I think, you know, if it were to persist and there's concerns in financial markets, for example, and you get indirect effects there, you know, in the past, the shutdowns haven't had that significant of an impact on markets, but it probably adds to the list of concerns that the market is dealing with right now, and if anything, exacerbates some of the weakening that we've seen.
With so many uncertain factors heading into 2019 and so many headwinds, do you see the Fed continuing on the path that's set out at its latest, policy decision, pricing in two rate hikes next year and an autopilot unwind to the balance sheet?
Yeah, I believe the Fed still is looking at the fundamentals in the economy. And the fundamentals, if you look at GDP growth, you know, the U.S. economy performed very well into 2018. And, you know, right now we're experiencing non-inflationary growth, which I think kind of sets the stage for the Fed to continue along in their path of rate hikes at the into 2019. We ourselves at NatWest Markets have just two rate hikes, and the market is obviously reassessing and repricing what it's expecting this year. You know, in fact, pricing in less than one hike this year and actually rate cuts in 2020. You know, so the Fed right now has signaled much more patience. Powell in his press conference sounded pretty open to the policy path going forward, so that, you know, they're watching the data along with other as we are as well, and they're not on this preset course of once rate hikes once per quarter, that it'll very much be data dependent. But I do think that they'll probably get in a couple rate hikes this year. We have two, but it'll depend on the evolution of the data.
Yeah, we got about a minute left here. You take a look at Fed funds futures contracts. They're not pricing in any rate hikes at all in 2019. How do you explain the disconnect?
Well, I think the concern in the equity market has leaked over to expectations. I mean, Fed Chair Powell did see much more uncertain about rate hikes than he did, and is the data that we got from the Fed themselves in the Fed dot plot did show that they have shifted lower their expectations for both the path and for how much rate hikes will have to go. But in their own forecast, they do still show rate hikes this year. They, along with our forecast, have two. So I think, you know, it'll depend on the data, but I think the market is probably a little bit ahead of itself pricing out any Fed rate hikes for this year.
NatWest Markets economist Kevin Cummins, thanks again for being here. Always appreciate getting your insights on Bloomberg Daybreak. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It is time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Ultimate Fighting Championship participants could take a major tax hit this weekend. UFC 232 was scheduled to take place in Las Vegas, but was moved to Los Angeles, and California's jock tax is the highest in the nation, 13.3%. Bloomberg Law has learned a union representing federal employees may sue the government for making employees work without pay during the partial shutdown. And the Trump administration has granted the first exclusions from tariffs imposed on China for intellectual property violations. Exclusions range from radiation
radiation therapy systems to salad spinners.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now, another legal news. President Trump's continued support for Saudi Arabia following the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi is giving a boost to a lawsuit over the president's financial dealings with foreign governments. For more on the story, Peter Barnes and Bob Moon speaks to Bloomberg News legal reporter Eric Larson.
This lawsuit that's pending against him in Maryland, filed by the attorneys general of District of Columbia and Maryland, over his profits from the Trump Organization's dealings with foreign governments. And they say that his profits from countries like Saudi Arabia bring into question his policies regarding Saudi Arabia, including his reaction to that murder.
Where does all this effort stand? Because you quote one legal expert in your story who says that at least in this case, it's kind of a stretch to try to connect the killing of Jamal Khashoggi to the emoluments clause.
That's correct. And in fact, the attorneys general say that they don't really need to prove any sort of quid pro quo in order to make their case. They say the Constitution strictly prohibits any kind of payments from foreign governments, regardless of what a president's reaction might be in response to those payments. So they're saying, this South Texas professor, Josh Blackman, we quote in this story, he says that it's kind of a stretch to link Trump's reactions to this case because he made it clear that he has a problem with journalists to begin with, and also that he has a penchant for praising authoritarian governments. So it's not really, there's not really a direct link that can be seen, but the attorneys general have subpoenaed several Trump Organization businesses and trying to find out how much money he's received from foreign governments. And they say that they don't really need to prove a quid pro quo, but this is the kind of question that it raises. Why does he give Saudi Arabia a pass when the CIA, for example, has linked it directly, the murder, to Saudi Arabia's government?
So just appearances is enough here? Is that established in law, or is it just an argument?
No, it's just an argument. The attorneys general are saying this shows the reason why the Constitution has this emoluments clause, because they don't want, we shouldn't have to wonder whether the president's policies are because of what's best for the nation or what's best for his pocketbook. So it's pretty straightforward. They're making the defense for why we have the emoluments clause to begin with. And they say they don't, you know, like I said, they don't have to show that quid pro quo, but they're saying that this is the kind of thing that raises questions in people's minds.
And that's Bloomberg News legal reporter Eric Larson speaking with Peter Barnes and Bob Moon. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And futures are moving higher, with S&P futures up about 15 points. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.